The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, there's no rule book on handling a breakup, and there certainly isn't one on handling a divorce. But my next guest has dedicated her career to mediating couples and ensuring that when a divorce does happen, it has the least traumatic outcome as possible. Along the way, she's had her eyes open to societal standards, prenuptial agreements, and the issues around divorce legislation. She's also quite literally been caught up in the middle of separations, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm joined now by senior family mediator and author of a book, Scars of Divorce, How to Avoid Them and Achieve an Amicable Divorce in Modern Ireland. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
This is Mission Impossible, isn't it?
Yes, it seems that way by times. But no, the idea is, Pat, that there is an easier way to deal
mediation
with divorce.
Mediation is a way. Yeah. Now, in all sorts of disputes, it works very well. Property disputes and so on, boundary disputes, all of these kind of things. In the marital arena, is it used widely?
Not enough, and hence part of the reason for writing the book is to create awareness as to what exactly the Mediation Act can do for couples who are separating. I suppose the most important thing is to create, for me, a greater understanding of what that act is, what it means, what it can do. Because traditionally we've been taking to the family law courts with solicitors and barristers, which we know increases the conflict and only, you know, serves to fuel
your solicitor and barrister has to do the best for you. I mean, that's what you're paying them for. So if the target is money or assets or access to children, for example, they will judge their performance on how well they do against the other crowd.
Exactly. However, we know that this system is broken. This is not something that is news. This is something that is widely reported, that the system needs reform. Now, and there's much talk about reform of our court system with the current bill that is going through at the moment to change the system of our courts. However, my approach is to stand back from it and to say, look what's already here, which is the Mediation Act, and to explain that there is a huge percentage of, I would say about 70% of people who are going to the courts don't need to be there.
Yeah.
They can deal with it
outside
of court.
You've said that the biggest obstacle to people using mediation is the existence of those courts to which they can have recourse and are probably driven there by their solicitors or friends, relatives, advisors saying you were shafted, go get them.
Yeah, exactly. So the conflict is exacerbated by the particular system that we're using. So, you know, we need as a society to look at it differently. Mm. We need more understanding about the Act. The Act allows for legally binding separation agreements to be completed outside of court.
Okay, now,
and that is little known.
Okay, now when you say legally binding separation agreements, we always have distinguished between separation and divorce.
Correct.
So does it allow legally binding separation agreements to become divorce?
Absolutely. But what it allows for are your terms for to use for your divorce. You need a judge to get a divorce in Ireland.
Okay, so you agree through the mediation process what the various bits and pieces are, property, access to children, obligations, and
correct,
so on. You agree that. You go to a judge when both parties have agreed and it's rubber stamped. And
exactly. It's a very different piece of work when you go into a court with your terms agreed. The most difficult part is coming to those terms. That's what's the cost. That's what escalates the time spent, is agreeing those terms. So I'm saying, let's look at it outside of court. Let's look at the alternative. The mediator works for the two parties. The mediator is professional responsibility is to work for the both parties in the best interest of the children and the parties.
Okay, now,
it doesn't cause greater division.
When you were talking about the cost ratcheting up, it's because you're going into court and you have your legal eagles helping you in court, and then one party doesn't turn up, for example.
Exactly.
So it's adjourned.
Or
you've still got to pay your people.
And in those instances, I believe there's deterrents that should be put in place to help avoid those situations. There aren't deterrents. There isn't a system within. There are cases that need to go to court. And for those cases, we need to create more deterrents, such as the costs on the person who is causing the problems, the costs to be awarded against the person who, for example, may remove a marital assets. There's so much more if we could focus on reducing the numbers going to court.
Now, I'll talk to you about the mediation process in a moment and how it actually works in practice. But first of all, in the courts and the reform you're talking about, they're going to put limits on the amount of money that or assets that might be involved. So the bigger they are, the higher the court you go to, isn't that it? And small assets can be disposed of and ruled on in a lower court.
That's what the bill at the moment that is going for is to try to achieve, that we can have a three-tier system, so to speak, district, circuit or high court. But, you know, that's working on the premise of getting as many people as possible through the court system. I'm saying let's stand back at it from it and deal with this outside of the court. Yeah. Because there's no way of avoiding costs or the stress once we're heading to court.
Okay, now two people have decided that their marriage is effectively over as far as they are concerned. Or perhaps, and we'll come to this in a moment, as far as one person is concerned, but not necessarily the other. Anyway, how does mediation work? Who appoints the mediator? And do you go in just on your own, or do you have advisors with you? Do you pay solicitors to accompany you, or what?
Either party can approach a mediator. I would always say to a person, you know, to try and kind of trust the process. If your spouse picks a mediator, you know, you must both meet and speak to the mediator separately to begin with. The idea then is that you come together to your mediator. However, mediation can work in different meetings where you don't have to sit together. But the main objective is that your mediator is working for your two parties. Okay.
Now, how would people come across the name of a mediator? Do you know, because if I was to nominate the mediator, then the opposing party might say, well, that's your mediator. You know, well, look, that mediator will be automatically on your side because you found that mediator.
This is why we need to create awareness of what mediation is. And the professional mediator is not taking sides. And I would say, you know, it might take a meeting with that person for the person to understand and feel comfortable with that mediator. But that's the professional capacity of a mediator, is to work for both parties and not to take sides. So it's greater understanding of what mediation is. It really, you know, it doesn't matter who calls the mediator. The mediator must be on neither party's
side. Are mediators typically solicitors?
No, they're not. Mediation is a separate profession. The profession of mediation needs more support. So when the Mediation Act was granted in the Mediation Act of 2017, there wasn't, as far as I'm concerned, enough awareness created when this came to play. So for me, we need to now kind of create awareness as to what that is, because the questions you're asking, the public are wondering about, and, you know, they don't really genuinely understand what it is that we do. But it's a separate profession to solicitors. And it's a separate profession to barristers. However, many solicitors I know would say, you know, this is the correct route to take. And we have plenty of barristers that no longer work as barristers, work as mediators out there. So it's a different profession.
Is there a qualification? You know, can you train to be a mediator and get a qualification that says you are fit to do this work?
Of course. Mediation, conflict resolution is a qualification in itself, and it's a recognised qualification. Personally, I came to it after experiencing the family law courts for nearly 20 years and realising that there has to be a better way of doing this. But, you know, I'm not alone in saying that there has to be a better way of doing this, Pat. It's well reported that the court system is broken, and I really am, you know, adamant that this is the better way of dealing with divorce.
Now, let's talk about why it is so difficult at the moment in the courts. We know that it's never over in Ireland, you know, that you can always go back to the well if you fall on hard times. You've done a deal, it's been sanctioned by the courts, and then you go back and say, I have no money, or our child has got sick, or whatever it is, and you can look for more. Now, I know often they don't get more because life has moved on, but still, it's never over. Does that need to change?
Going back for maintenance or dealing with maintenance in the courts needs to be reformed. Okay, at the moment, the onus is on the person who is receiving the maintenance to go back to court, and that must change. So if the payer doesn't pay, the say, for example, mum or dad who's should be in receipt of maintenance. The onus is on them to go back to court. That needs to change. We need guidelines around what maintenance should look like. That needs to change. There's so much reform needed around maintenance, and it has been well documented. You know, there's so much more we
but
need to do.
What I was really referring to, I mean, when people do not live up to their legal obligations, that is one thing. But when people want the conditions changed because their circumstances have changed.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, for instance, that if parties are, you know, who's receiving a spouse who's receiving maintenance from their former spouse gets married again, they lose their maintenance from the first spouse. And sometimes people don't bother marrying. They live with somebody, they, you know, are effectively a couple, but they don't legalize it because they lose the dosh from party number one.
Yeah. And look, those kind of individual cases that people can go back at, you know, unfortunately, there's not enough clarity around what spousal maintenance or child maintenance should look like, which, if there was further clarity, would reduce the need for continuing court cases or for people to take each other back to court. So, you know, that is why there is a greater need for awareness as to what these things should look like. You know,
and there's always seems to be an effort to make sure that people can continue to live in the lifestyle to which they've become accustomed. Now, often we hear about this in the case of high rollers, so that so and so will get, you know, so many millions so that they continue to go to the Seychelles for their holidays because they always enjoy that during the marriage and so on and so forth. Of course, it's not always about high rollers. It can be about people who don't have limited money. And in terms of trying to maintain the lifestyle of one party, sometimes that'll beggar the other party.
Yes, I mean, look.
You know, someone gets the family home, the other is living in a hovel because there isn't room, there isn't enough money to have two comfortable homes.
The idea is to come out of the marriage with kind of fairness, I suppose. And the mediation approach is to try and help the couples to create a fair agreement. One thing is, you mentioned the high rollers and high value cases. I've spoken about it recently. We do have a need for prenuptial agreements in Ireland, and they have not been legislated for. And for the like of people with high value marriages and who are bringing, and people who are marrying later in life as well, Pat, that are going into marriages with
assets.
You know, really, we know, you know, they're not romantic to talk about prenuptial agreements. However, divorce is on the increase. It is something that needs to be addressed and would in itself create a reduction in these court cases that we're seeing that you know, our courts are bursting at the seams with.
Some of the comments and questions coming in. I'm separated over 16 years. I'd love to be divorced, but just can't afford it. 4,000 seems to be the basic cost of getting a divorce.
4,000 with another zero on it would be more likely, as to what's been reported to me, are the costs. I mean, 4,000 if you're...
This might be someone, though, where everything's agreed.
Full agreement on everything, yes. And it's very hard to do it for any less than that if you're in full agreement on everything.
Okay. What are the costs of mediation then?
Mediation is a much clearer process in dealing with your finances. So really, again, it's very hard to tell when you don't know what level of acrimony is going on, but you're charged per meeting. You know, typically in mediation, mediators, you know, it's really important for me that the fees are very transparent. So you charge per meeting, and then when you find out what's required for the separation agreement, you know what's involved in the drafting costs. So you're talking about between 1,000 to 2,000 per person to achieve a fully binding separation agreement. So it's dramatically
And then to go
lower.
Into court and get it rubber stamped, how much extra?
You don't
for that?
Need to go into court to get your separation agreement from mediation rubber stamped.
But the divorce then, when you want to get
When you want to go to divorce, you have your terms. It's a very simple process.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, the paperwork is not very user-friendly, but a lot of people go in themselves as lay applicants with their mediated separation agreements and apply for their divorce themselves.
They do it
and
themselves.
Manage through the system.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the judges are amenable to that?
The judges are amenable to that. Like, we're set up that we want to use solicitors and barristers through the courts, and that's, however, it's not working. And it's not acceptable. People don't have money trees in their back garden to pay for the high costs.
I'll read you some more of the comments. Absolutely agree. My costs alone, 35K. plus 10k for a barrister because my ex-husband dragged it out. We didn't have huge assets and the cost spiraled. A mediation approach without incurring huge legal costs has got to be the way. Listening to your speaker, I think that's an ideal world. People break up for a reason, very hard to want to talk through a mediator. I think they should actually make everything easier through the courts. I'm battling 9 years now, and now I have to go back into court again because he broke the agreement. The idea, what you were saying, if you can possibly have joint meetings with the mediator, well and good, but you can meet the mediator separately, serially,
if you
like. Absolutely.
A lot of people are so, you see, it depends on what point you approach a mediator. If you're 9 years down the road battling with somebody and someone says, well, let's sit down and talk about it, you know, it's more effective when mediation is reached early on in the conflict. But how and ever, at any point, you can sit down with a mediator and you don't have to sit in the same room as your spouse.
This one here, and it's extraordinary. I'm just trying to get over the news that my spouse has failed to respond an invitation to attend family courts mediation services for the second time in 2 years. Private mediation refuses to respond to any correspondence regarding financial affairs, but more important, seeing my youngest child. I cannot afford a solicitor as I'm paying the mortgage, all the bills, supporting my child and helping my eldest adult child who had to move out. My only asset is my house and I live in shared rented accommodation. Why is mediation not mandatory?
Good point. I believe, and I have written about it extensively, that mediation involving children should be mandatory. There are ways of getting people to the table to talk, and there needs to be more pressure, more penalties, I suppose, for people who won't come willingly.
The problem with the majority of relationship breakdowns is that it's rare for both parties to be on the same page with regard to the future. Feelings have no relevance in law or mediation. If a person is hurt or feels abandoned, they cannot always be rational. Counselling to deal with the hurt should be incorporated into the mediation process to assist the couple or one of them to cope with these changes. This would give the mediation process a better chance. That's from Gráinne.
Yeah, mediation isn't counselling, but it's often kind of a side effect of the mediation process when your views can be heard, that it helps achieve an amicable agreement. So the process itself, it lends to improving how we feel and, you know, allowing ourselves the time to be heard rather than the opposite adversarial.
Here's another process. I went through the mediation process some years back. My husband earned in excess of 300,000 a year at the time and offered me 20,000 a year to live as a starting point. He lied throughout the process and met privately with the mediator. Needless to say, the mediation process did not work. Also, during the divorce process, my husband consistently lied in his affidavit of means. However, this did not result in prosecution of some sort for his lying.
Yeah, and that's what I touched off kind of earlier, whereby either party is lying through the process. There is no situation in place at the moment that we can award costs against him to deter him from the lying. So, you know, that's about the government rowing in and creating a deterrent for people who are prepared to lie on their affidavits.
Now, how complicated this can be, I want to read you this one. A friend is married in Ireland, house in Ireland with husband, both now living in the UK. They're putting together the agreed separation after 7 years of living separately. House in Ireland, half owned by wife, will put her half of the house to son when 18, meaning she continues to pay 50% of the mortgage. But her half indeed goes in the son's name. With the ex-husband, his father, they both own the Irish home. I have two questions. Do the separated couple, both living in the UK, need to divorce in court in the UK? And two, does the Irish separation agreement hold up if they need to divorce in the UK, or can the UK courts discard it and ask for full review of UK and Irish assets? The UK assets are already separately owned by each person, so any UK assets have not been factored into the assets in the Irish separation document.
Look, Pat, you couldn't possibly answer that lady's queries, unfortunately. I mean, the whole case would have to be looked at.
You've done it in one jurisdiction. You've lived separately. You've amassed separately more assets in the UK. Will the courts in Ireland then look at the assets in the UK and drag them in?
Or? That's a case for the judge for to determine, to be honest with you. It's not something that could be, unless they were both in agreement with it and both came to the table willingly in agreement. It's not something that could be decided by anybody other than, you know, the judicial system would have to make a call on that one, Pat.
Mm-hmm. It took my partner 5 years to divorce with a bill of 12k for each party. It's absolutely insane. It was straightforward in terms of the house and the children. It's prohibitively expensive for people to get divorced in this country. That's according to Fiona. And hence the recommendation for mediation.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly why we need to create awareness for it and drastically reduce the numbers that are queuing up to our courts.
Well, people can make a start if they're heading down this road. Hopefully not too many people will, but they can get the book, Scars of Divorce, How to Avoid Them and Achieve an Amicable Divorce in Modern Ireland. Its author, Michelle Brown. Michelle, thank you very much
thank
for
you,
joining
Pat.
Us. And if you're short of cash for that divorce, well, you might try this.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.